Hi, hello. We have another jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot for you. We roam the baseline. We talk about some teams that have impressed us. Hello, Lakers. Hello, Thunder. Hello, Bulls. Hello, Blazers. We're going to have some fun. We cycle through some teams that have us a bit confused. Dallas Maverick fans, this section is for you. We got some other ones to hit on, some player shout-outs, and we close with some free throws and Pelicans and Saint fans. I'm sorry. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Ready to talk some hoops.
We're going to talk some hoops. We can do that right now. It's time to roam the baseline, Steve. Let's get into some teams that have impressed. And naturally, since we are fresh off of a strategy stream live in the NBA app that we got to do for Lakers Blazers, a fun game, felt fitting to start with one of those teams. Steve, the Lakers are 6-2 right now. They are coming off of a win against the Portland Trail Blazers in which no LeBron James, no Luka Doncic, no Austin Reeves. They sweep both ends of the back-to-back. Big win over the Miami Heat, who've also been rolling. Beat this Portland defense. We're going to talk a little bit about them a little bit later, but I'm impressed with their decisiveness in the half court. They have been picking teams apart. Like, naturally, a lot of that has been when Austin Reeves was hooping, when Luka Doncic was hooping, and that is still the case. I mean, anytime you can average 40. Actually, we can just pause and talk about Luka very quickly. What are we witnessing from Luka Doncic?
Nonsense. Complete and utter nonsense. This guy, when he plays, is losing his mind every single night.
And, like, this isn't, like, the numbers themselves are new. He's averaging darn near a 40-point triple-double. I don't think that part is going to sustain. But Luka Doncic being in command offensively isn't necessarily a new bit for him. Like, this has just kind of been Luka since he stepped into the league. This is why he is a prominent figure in MVP conversations pretty much every year that he's healthy. But this just feels a little different. His command inside the arc has absolutely popped for me so far this year, Steve. Anytime he gets a defender on his side or on his hip, it's just kind of cooked. And I think the Lakers have also done a good job. Sometimes it's a five-out alignment with their spacing. Sometimes it's flat spacing. Sometimes it looks like it's going to be five-out. Do you get a wing cut? And now as Luka is driving, oh, he can just get to the free throw line kind of unimpeded. And because he's playing at his own pace and he has this strength, he has this frame, he can get to some of these fakes and things like that. Now he's just making everything in the mid-range area, which my mathy brain is like, ooh, these are a lot of mid-range shots for the Lakers. Not a lot of shots at the rim for the Lakers. It does not matter if Luka Doncic is performing to this degree. As of recording, 18 of 22 on floater range shots so far. And per the Genius IQ now, no longer Second Spectrum, they have him at 12 of 15 on floaters specifically. It is nonsensical what he's doing. And then you get into the playmaking on top of that. So I've just enjoyed what he's brought to this offense. We talked about Austin Reeves last week, so I'm not going to hang in there too long. But this Lakers group, getting it done right now, Steve.
Well, I mean, to the Luka point of it all, this is what he does. This is the theory of what he does as far as I can take whatever scheme you want to do. If you want to put two on the ball, you want to be in a drop, that helps with the floaters. You want to switch. I can attack matchups. I can make plays. I can open things up. And so that gives the Lakers that base in the half court. I think the biggest thing for me with the Lakers, I know people are shocked that they got the win over the Blazers. One of the toughest type of games to win is when the top guys are out. Like, always remember that. This is my PSA for everyone. That it's not an easy deal. The game plan gets thrown out the window. You need to get the buy-in again from your team. Shorthanded teams have a lot of opportunity for guys who have been waiting to play and to go out and show what they can do. And boy, did they. Salute to Nick Smith Jr. Got a lot of contributions. I think you got to point a lot to what J.J. Redick has done with this team. You know, he threw out the three C's in the preseason. Championship shape, championship communication, championship habits. And so we could talk about the high-level play of Luka's had. We could talk about the growth of Austin Reeves. We could talk about the return of LeBron James is coming. The Lakers being able to kind of do the little things early on in this season is something that can really pay off for them. And so you put yourself in a position to be closer towards the top of the Western Conference. Now it's the West. So, I mean, you have a bad couple of days and who knows where you end up. But
yeah,
you see the belief and the buy-in. I think that's what that win means. You know, JJ Redick's post-game saying his belief level in this group is as high as it's ever been. That's huge. And if you're a guy who played in that game, Nick Smith Jr., I understand when my opportunity and my number's called, I can go ahead and get it done. Bronny James making winning plays out there.
Multiple.
In against Miami and against Portland, as far as just doing the right things defensively. Offensively, I can drive. I can get a paint touch. I can create offense that way. That stuff's important. And so I think one of the things you got to appreciate about the Lakers has been what they've done as far as the habits go.
Yeah, it's been good stuff. And I think to that end, I actually wanted to flip ends and talk a little bit about this Laker defense. As of recording, 19th overall per cleaning the glass. Not quite where you want it to be, but as we talked about before the year, if the profile of Lakers team is elite offense and the defense is just at a level, 16th, 17th, 19th, that gives them a formula to win games. Again, hanging 19th right now, still switching at a high rate, but not switching as much as they were last year, which is intriguing to me. JJ Redick leaning a little bit more into the zone has been a nice little subplot of this Lakers season. He sprinkled in against Portland last night, or on Monday night, excuse me. And I've just enjoyed them trying to build out what they want to do on that end. We want to still have this base of early help. We want to make sure our shell is 30. If we're not going to be a full court pressure team, we want to make sure you don't generate paint touches at a high level at the very least. And then if we do feel like you're getting comfortable, we can throw out some changeups. And the fact that they are willing to try different things, I think, is a positive. Because, again, they do have a bit of margin for error, at least in theory, when you have this kind of execution happening on the offensive end. You know, they got points up against Portland last night. But in general, you're looking at Luka, Austin Reeves, eventually LeBron James, just three guys that can function as legitimate high-level engines offensively. So just keeping eyes on what the defense looks like, because, again, if it's at a certain level, they're going to be in a good spot, in my opinion.
I think the fact that you're saying keeping eyes on it is important, because for me, it's how do they build this out throughout the regular season? It's clear they don't want to put two on the ball if they don't have to. You know, they're just not a thing they want to do. So more comfort with drop reps is important, especially if you have DeAndre Ayton, Jackson Hayes. Smaller lineups can switch. We see them switch and build their early help, have defenders at the boxes and at the elbows on the court to tell players, hey, the driving lanes aren't here. Big reason why they're able to come back and beat Portland. The zone curveball, I think, is a really important one. And so how many pitches can they find, I think, is the biggest thing to be able to toggle through things. I think when it comes towards, you know, the rest of the regular season, playing some of the top teams in the West, the playoffs, you're going to have to be able to dig into your bag and say, okay, maybe this isn't working. Maybe this is our game plan. We need to be able to do this for 2 minutes to get back to what we're doing. And so I think that's what I'm monitoring with the Lakers defense. We've seen activity. Are they giving up threes? Are they keeping the ball in front? So it's just, can they kind of navigate the tough portions? That's going to be one for me. Oh, very quickly, Marcus Smart, demon. Demon on defense. I don't know if people forgot how good Marcus Smart is defensively, but he's definitely showing it on ball, off ball, his rotations, the little switches he does. He fits right into what they do.
Yeah, just to bounce off of that, well, two things. One, as you mentioned, the Lakers just don't want to put two on the ball. They were dead last in blitz rate or two on the ball rate last year. They are once again towards the bottom of the league in that. So that portion has not changed for JJ Redick. So again, being able to find different counters without tapping that button, I think, is important for them moving forward. And to the Marcus Smart portion, he is just, and I say this complimentary, so annoying when he is healthy. Like, it's just the ball pressure. Off the ball, are you coming off of a pin down or something? No, I'm getting into your jersey. If I'm off the ball, I'm roaming. You don't know. You don't really have driving lanes because of how the Lakers want to build their shell anyway. If you do happen to win a drive, I'm sliding in and taking charges. Is there a loose ball? I'm beating you to the floor. And even if I don't beat you to the floor, I am now grabbing the ball and probably bumping you too. It may be a jump ball, but you're not going to like me by the end of the night. You're not going to like me by the end of the quarter. It's just been fun watching him infuse that kind of energy into this Lakers group. And I think there were fair questions heading into the year based on what the last year and a half or 2 years have been like for Marcus Smart. Hey, what level can he hit at this point of his career? So far this year, he's been pretty darn good on that end. And so you obviously want that to sustain. But I like that you gave Marcus Smart a shout out. He deserves it, especially with what he put together last night against Portland.
It's good. I think one thing for him offensively, this is a chance for him to get downhill more, be involved more with the ball. And I think every time Marcus Smart is on one of these type teams, when he's getting paint touches, when he's getting downhill, who is he spraying the ball to? What does that open up? So if we're talking Luka Reeves come back, Marcus Smart part of the attack, using him as a screener for Luka Doncic, having Luka screen for him, that's something that, you know, he's experienced in. So I think he fits. And I guess I'll ask you this question. How do you feel about the lineup versatility for the Lakers early in the season? Because I think they've gotten a lot of contributions from people that maybe didn't get the same amount of respect they should have before the season.
It's like similar to the defense is something that I'm monitoring because like with Jared Vanderbilt in particular, for an example, love that he is one just healthy enough to be flying around, but he is flying around defensively. He is a part of when they do get into some of these corner crashes on the offensive glass, he's mucking it up there defensively, can take on different matchups, can help in possessions, can help force some turnovers for you because of the way he roams, but you're still monitoring, okay, what is the off-ball offense portion of the program going to be for Vanderbilt? Like, the cuts aren't always going to be available and such. Our team's going to put centers on him, are they going to help off, are they going to be able to cut off some of these drives for the Lakers? So, like, there's that part. The guard play, I have enjoyed the musical stylings of Jake LaRavie, who I guess more so starting at this point. Just say he's putting together some good basketball right now, Steve. Just saying. But you keep an eye on the LaRavie of it all, his consistency, Dalton Connect. Is he going to knock down shots? Like, there's still a level of how stable is this for me with the second unit? But I do like that they have different options they can get to. And if they do hit that level of consistency, I'm going to feel better about it.
Understood. I agree. I think I'm intrigued by the Rui Hachimura and the DeAndre Ayton of it all. I think with DeAndre Ayton, he has a skill set as a big the Lakers have not had. And obviously he was very motivated to face the Portland Trailblazers and showcase that over and over and over again. But his ability to kind of operate in that elbow area, his ability to just kind of get the shots you need and hold up defensively, I think he's done a pretty decent job when he's on the baseline of roaming the baseline, get it? And getting some of those blocks and those rotations there. So that's been key. But yeah, I think the Lakers, we'll see how they build out their movement. You know, teams can disrupt them sometimes when they play through the elbow and try and attack that way. But a lot of potential when you have the talent they have and you're building the blocks as far as your habits pretty early in the season.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, Steve, who is the team that's top of mind for you?
Going to shock you real quick, Nikias.
Okay.
It's going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder for me.
Yes.
They are just an absolute machine, and I feel like we should mention that. Top defense in the league, and you feel it every time you watch them because they just fly around. Do you want to drive? Someone's in your chest, and if they're not in your chest, someone in a blue jersey is nearby causing havoc and reaching and making you not have a good time. And then I think the other part is offensively, they have found such a comfort on that end of the floor as far as being able to flow from side to side, from action to action. Not new. It's not like they weren't an offensive team, but you could just feel the confidence from OKC. I think one of those things that I laughed about was how everyone went from last year saying, hey, do the Thunder have enough experience? And now this year it's championship experience as they find their flow and go on these runs that just basically flip a game. The other thing I want to mention is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We've talked about him a lot because he's playing very, very well. We know what he's doing scoring-wise. I have enjoyed his ability just to upgrade in the playmaking department a little bit. There's more of a comfort from Shai in pick and roll as far as reading the defense and understanding what's happened. You put two on the ball against him. One, that's a good development for OKC. Two, he's making those passes a lot cleaner. So if there's two men on him, he's able to kind of turn the corner, see the weak side help, you know, in pick and roll when there's help. They're going to pull over on the roller. He makes a skip pass or he's able to find the roller. And that adds another element to his game because he can go one-on-one. You can post him up. You can do different things for him. But if he adds pick and roll attack, which they developed last year, boy, it gets tough. Mm-hmm. And I think it's rude when OKC plays zone, man.
That Pelicans game got you, huh?
Why'd they do that?
Yeah, I don't think they had to. Like, they have enough defenders to blow up your offense anyway. And it's just like, yeah, attack gaps. We dare you to pass the basketball. Go ahead and make that skip to the corner. We dare you. There's no one there. Oh, no, there's three people there. We're going the other way. They're just a very fun unit.
Man, they're just next man up doesn't even work, I don't think, anymore. Everyone they go through And Coach Mark Dadlow's talked about, you know, expanding the rotation, make sure everyone's ready. When they come in, they know exactly what they're supposed to do, and they go do it. Mm-hmm. Hadn't seen Isaiah Joe in weeks. This guy's letting it fly.
Listen, that brother came back watching the Wizards. Didn't watch it live, watched it a day or so after. It's like, oh, cool, Isaiah Joe's here, 20 points. It's like, okay. One, on your Shea point, seeing two on the ball a lot more than he did last year by 8% rate last season, up to 13%. That's fifth among high volume pick and roll ball handlers so far. So seeing more of that coverage, that's something that popped in the season opener against Houston. It's like, oh, not only is he seeing Aubin Thompson, Steven Adams is up here. Halperin Şengün is up here. And so watching him diagnose that and get more comfortable with that, to your point, has been a joy of this season. The passing feels so much better. To the OKC role players really quickly. It almost feels disrespectful to call them role players because they're just stars in their role is the more accurate way to frame it.
Mm.
You know, talked about AJ Mitchell last week, so not going to hang there too long, but he's been aggressive. The drives have hit. He is someone that allows, and I tweeted about this when watching the Pelicans game over the weekend. Just in general, the Thunder having these players not named Shea that are comfortable initiating offense and even generating paint touches, it just makes OKC so much more difficult to deal with because you don't know when A.J. Mitchell is just going to put his shoulder into your chest and get to the free throw line. You don't know when Cason Wallace is just going to win on a drive and generate a paint touch. And so you're scrambling to that. And then the second side of the action, the second phase of the possession, is Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who is going to get to his spot and score or foul you or, you know, get you to foul him. Or you're going to foul him and he's going to score at the same time. Like, it's just insane that they're able to do this. And these secondary ball handlers that they have also double as good screeners. So even if you are working to the second side, it's now inverted. Now Shea's picking at matchups. If you're putting two on the ball, now it is a guard making these short roll decisions. And they just keep the chain going that way. So that part's been a lot of fun. And just to the stars in their roles in general, Cason Wallace has been all over. Like, he's making an all-defense team if he stays healthy, Steve.
It is
nuts what he's been able to do
there
to start
is.
This season. Like, on a very basic level, he's averaging 3 steals per game, which is tops in the league right now. But beyond the steals, the screen navigation remains sturdy. He's not afraid to slide in and take charges. Off the ball, he's part of the scram switch situation. He's part of dictating things on the back line when he's in the weak side corner. He'll point things out. He'll rotate early. When OKC wants to send doubles, he's flying around and adding to that attack. So he's doing all the little things. And on top of that, if you want a box score stat to support it, you got that very loudly. And so the fact that he's eclipsing 30 minutes a game right now as a recording, I don't think he's going to be in jeopardy of, like, you know, the 65 game played minimum. It's that. But in order for that game to count, it has to be at least 20 minutes. Like, I don't think he's going to be in fear of that. I think he's just going to be in if he keeps up this level of play. Again, talked about A.J. Mitchell. Jalen Williams, the big. I just want more respect placed on his name. The screening, the playmaking, he is letting it fly from three. And defensively will guard a little bit of everyone. And he's fine taking an ungodly amount of charges, too. That Pelicans game was a very funny one, Steve. See? Zion was fed up with that man by the end of that game.
Yeah. I gave y'all a treat. I knew bringing the Thunder up would get this out of Nikias. That's what I'm talking about.
They're just a fun team, Steve. And, like, there's another level to hit. Like, Chet's going to be back.
Yeah, there it
is.
You
know what I mean? Like, it's kind of wild. They're putting together undefeated, top 10 in offense, best defense in the league, and I think they're sixth in half-court defense right now. Like, there's another level for them to hit, which is terrifying.
Very fun. Now, can I give you a fun fact?
Sure.
They are the third team in NBA history to start back-to-back seasons with a 7-0 record.
Hmm.
The 63-65 Celtics did it, and the 93-95 Rockets did it. So there you go.
Huh. And I think they did a little bit of winning. So it seems to bode well for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Okay. Quickly for me, Steve. Talked about the Lakers. They played the Blazers. Want to talk a little bit about the Blazers. It feels like ill timing that since they're coming off of a loss to the Lakers that were missing a bunch of folks. But overall, if we're zooming out for this season, they have impressed me with what they've been able to do this year. It naturally starts with the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Highest average pickup point in the league. Highest rate of backcourt pressure in the league. teams just cannot get the ball across half court. They forced multiple 8-second violations. The defense is just nasty.
It's not fun to have to try and execute offense when you have to deal with Drew Holiday and Tumani Kamara. And we've seen that early on this season, guys.
Yeah. And they come in waves, Steve. It's like you have Drew, who's just been playing very well to start the season, first and foremost. Tumani Kamara, fresh off of his first all-defensive selection last year, playing at a high level still. Some of the like back-end tracking data isn't great for him, but like, you know, watch those games. He's flying around still, taking on tough assignments, et cetera. And it's like they toss out these, like, you try to get to the rim. Here's Donovan Klingon, just massive rim protector that you don't have fun shooting over. Like, you get to some of these other wings. Like, if Shaedon Sharpe is the worst defender in the starting lineup, which I think he is, all due respect, that is still a very athletic guy. And if you beat him, you're worrying about everyone else kind of swarming and playing the passing lanes. So you can't even really pick at him the way that you might think you can. And then you get into the second unit. It's like, oh, no, we're going to keep this going. Chris Murray, he's going to do it. You know, Blake Wesley just suffered a foot injury, so he's going to be out for a while. But, okay, cool. Here's Caleb Love. He'll do it. Here's CeeDee Sissoko. He'll fly around and do it, too. You know, Matisse Thybulle was hurt. But before he went hurt, you know he's going to fly around and steal everything that you throw in his vicinity. Mm-hmm. You just don't get a break against this Blazers group.
No, they got a lot of size. They got a lot of length. They got a lot of activity. They get after it. And the other portion is, and especially we saw that when they were able to beat Denver, obviously they can go small and just double down on we're switching, we're keeping everything in front. You're not going to have a good time. We can also kind of manipulate and navigate some of these matchups as far as we can put Drew Holiday on different people. We can put Jeremy Grant, who has rededicated himself to the defensive end, on different people. And we can kind of manipulate and switch those matchups and take away some of your pet actions. And so I think that's where having that defensive base is big for the Blazers because it allows them to get out and run and play faster. I think one of the things they have to do is, you know, I think they're first in the league in points off turnovers, second in the league in fast break points. So those stops are able to kind of sustain them offensively. The one thing we learned against the Lakers is they're going to have to learn how to execute offensively. Mm-hmm. This is part of the learning how to win program for teams. What do you do when the threes aren't going down? What do you do when your defense is getting poked at? I mean, the Lakers shot 60% in the second, third, and fourth quarter of that game. Mm-hmm. So how do you execute against a set offense? Drew Holiday's been pretty good for them for the majority of the year. Didn't have a great night against the Lakers. But what are our pet actions? Are we just getting a drive and kick? Are we able to find different ways to poke at teams? That's what they're going to have to learn. So it was an interesting dynamic to see them execute and fight against Denver in the way they did and then have the night against the Lakers they did. But that's kind of what happens. That's part of the journey for a quote-unquote, I guess, young-ish team.
I was going to say, it's weird to call them young. Yeah, it's weird to call them young because then they just added Drew Holiday to the mix. We talked about Jeremy Grant, who technically a veteran, though. It doesn't feel like he's that old. But, yeah, I think the half-court offense is going to be where the growth area rises. I think that's where you are hoping for some sort of Shaedon Sharpe leap in particular offensively because he is a guy that can get to the rim that third quarter against the Lakers. He's like, okay, we need to get something. I am putting my head down over and over and over and over again, and you're just not going to have a good time dealing with me at the rim. So, like, you want that kind of growth from him. But in general, I guess to zoom out, like, I have appreciated, one, they have worked over the last year and a half, really, to kind of modernize their offense and to modernize their shot profile. They get a ton of shots at the rim. They take a ton of threes. They do not take minis, if you care about that. And even within, like, the rim focus for them, they also just crush you on the offensive glass, so they generate extra possessions on top of that. And so you're getting into a little bit of the possession-winning battle there. We're getting extra chances offensively. We're forcing a ton of turnovers defensively. That should give you a margin for error. But they put their heads down, Steve. I think they are second in drives per 100 possessions as of recording behind another team that we're going to talk about shortly. But Denny gets downhill. Shaedon gets downhill. Jeremy Grant has done a solid job to this point of the season of balancing the threes that he's taking and making and also putting his head down and getting free off some cuts. Drew Holiday with his drive. So, like, they do have this emphasis and a foundation that I believe in, but you just want someone else to pop to really take that offense over the top to really complement what they're doing defensively.
Yeah, they've been a good team. Knock on the door. Again, the Western Conference is tough because you look at what's going on, and it's like, hey, remember the Warriors were having that hot start? Now that, again, you lose twice, you're in the eighth spot.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to navigate the season, but off to a good start for Portland.
Yeah. Quick question for me, and then we'll flip it, Steve. Last thing for Portland. Guys, talking about the offense and how they've tried to modernize things. How have you felt about Donovan Klingon on the perimeter this year?
I mean, I like the fact that when he gets a kick, he's looking to go to a dribble handoff, or he's looking to go into a screening action and keep the flow going. I don't mind mixing in a shot from three if the defense is off him. Mm-hmm. But I think part of the game today is taking those quote-unquote non-shooting bigs, mix in some timely threes, but we space you to open up the floor. And now if the defense helps off you, we can put a big in a different spot to have to recover in a different way. We can play off that. So I think that's probably where I enjoy it the most.
Okay. I like it. I like it. All right. You have another team that you'd like to discuss, Steve?
It's time to talk about the Chicago Bulls.
It sure is.
The 5-1 Chicago Bulls, who will have a matchup with the 5-1 Philadelphia 76ers. And who thought that was going to happen when the regular season started? I think the thing about the Bulls for me that stood out early and often, they have an identity, Nekias. They know how they want to play. They want to move the ball. They want to share the ball. Lead the league in drives per game as a team. 62.6. Last year, they were fourth. First in the league in assists. I think they're up there at the top for passes made. You have to be ready to defend the Chicago Bulls. Mm-hmm. It's not a new concept. We've seen them look to get the ball up and down the court and try and attack. We saw the increase in three-point shots both last year and this year. We're seeing the drives go up a ton. And I think that's an important part for them to kind of continue to build this boat out. When you watch the Bulls, they're getting it up, pushing off made basket. If you are watching them in the half court, you have to keep an eye when they're humming on their perimeter guys. Mm-hmm. Watch how they give slight relocations. Watch how they give slight movements to cut and stay in the vision of whoever's driving and the impact that kind of has on defenses. I think it's interesting in the half court, something they have to navigate, which we'll talk about. But I think Nikola Vucevic is such a unique fit for them in the sense that he can give them a little bit of a balancing act. You can space them. You can play through him at the top of the key and get into some movement. You can get it to him in the post and get him off some movement, get some cross screens for him. So you can kind of have a little bit of something that you can rely on in the half court, which I think is important. And so when they're getting downhill, that's really impressive. And they share that ball. Buzelis, Ayo Dosunmu have really gotten after it. It's been fun to watch. The defense is where I think it gets interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's been something I've been monitoring throughout the season. I think a lot of the early success, people looked at the opponent's three-point shooting percentage and said, hey, I don't know about that. And then they played the Knicks a second time, and the Knicks decided, yeah, we're going to make all of these threes, and you're not going to have a good time. I think I have a little bit of an alternate thought. I don't know if the Bulls' defense is going to hold up at the level that it's been. They were fifth in offensive rating, down to 12th in defensive rating now, a little bit higher earlier. There's an element where, okay, we can keep Nikola Vucevic dropped in pick and roll, keep him back. We can have our weak side in, so all those defenders off ball can be tighter into the court. We can close back out. Threes are there. But, hey, we can kind of get you in this quick shot land where you're not really executing and putting pressure on us. We kind of get to sit back, close out, contest, and run. And so it's a balance, I think, for teams between quality looks and making the Bulls' defense work. Now, what happens when you make the Bulls' defense work? What happens when you make them make multiple efforts? They're 26 in opponents' points in the paint. I don't think that's sustainable. So this is where if you're facing the Bulls, there's going to be possessions, but you have to have the mindset to, okay, we need to get good looks. We need to put pressure on them to make a second effort defensively, to be another closeout, to make them rotate and work. Mm-hmm. That's where it gets interesting. So for me with the Bulls, it's like a lot of this works when you have the blend of making threes, when you're able to get in the paint and get stops. How does the league react to that? And how do they react to the league reacting to that? If one piece of the puzzle goes missing, how much falls apart?
I think that's a fair way to frame it, particularly at the end. And I think that's where a lot of the defensive angst comes in with the Bulls. And I'll start with the defense, then I'll circle back to the offense because you hit a lot of good stuff there. But on the defense, like you mentioned, they do give up quite a bit of production at the rim. Like part of that is just personnel. And zooming out with the Bulls, when you look at, okay, how believable is this start, you kind of look at their overall defensive personnel and it's like, okay, they don't have a lot of like A minus B plus guys. You can still build out a really good defense that way without having that quote unquote perimeter stopper, but it does give you a smaller margin for error. Everyone has to be connected. So to your point with that second Knicks game, when they were able to enjoy the overall pace of this game. And it's Jalen Brunson getting early paint touches. It's Cat looking to drive and getting early touches. It's OG with early paint touches. And it's like, okay, you got to build out this shell a little bit better, because now that the threes are flowing to this degree, and the interesting part about that, teams have generally shot pretty poorly from three against Chicago. They also just have not allowed a ton of them, at least looking per clean the glass. Mm-hmm. About 42% of opponent shots are coming at the rim. That is dead last, or the highest mark in the league. They're third in opponent three-point rate, Steve. Mm. And it's just like, okay, you are clearly with us, you know, with a split that stark, it's very clear. Oh, we are prioritizing. We're not letting y'all beat us from here. We're going to sit back. We're going to try to contest. We're not letting you get those extra points, because we also want to run on the other end and generate threes for ourselves. So like, that's kind of how they want to math it. That second Knicks game, it's like, oh no, we're getting to the paint. We're getting to the line. And we're also getting these drive and kick threes. And it's the whole bit. And it's like, oh, that is untenable for this group, especially since they don't have like that A-plus level perimeter stopper. So I am curious to see like if that shifts at all in terms of what they want to give up, how much help they want to show. And as I just kind of think about defense as a concept, my thing that I've been trying to like figure out how to verbalize is that I want to be able to feel you in some kind of area. If you're going to be a full court pressure team, then that's cool. If you're not going to be that, then how physical are you off the ball? Are you going to be like a blitz heavy pick and roll team? Like, just what area is an opponent offense going to feel you? And with the Bulls, like, I have appreciated off the ball, there is a little bit of physicality. I tweeted about this watching the first Bulls Knicks game, whereas Jalen Smith checks in, and it's just like he has a hand on Cat all of the time.
Yeah,
before screens or whatever it is, he's just poking at him. It's like the young kid, I'm not touching you, but he actually is. And I'm just like, you know, just little stuff like that, to where you're not getting free releases into your screens. You're not getting free releases when coming off of off-ball stuff. It's small, but it's just like, you just have to have something. And so I do appreciate that the Bulls have that part at the very least. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, look at Nekias getting into the 90s. Physicality on defense. Look at this guy. I'm proud of you.
I'm just like, you know, this is what it's all about. And so fair to monitor what the defense is going to look like, but they do just kind of have a formula for what they are willing to live with.
Well, I think just quickly on the defense point, it's going to be interesting to see how much they try to do, how much they want to put people at the level, how much they want to switch, especially with Smith in there. And does that alter what we've seen them kind of have a little bit of success with? Does that open things up for teams? Just intrigued.
Yeah, I got you. And then quickly on the offense, I just love the improvisational nature of what they're doing with Vooch right now. And it just, I was thinking about this the other day. It's like typically with a big, like you are going to get like a split action or you are flowing into a handoff. And the fact that I never really know when Vooch gets the ball, which one is going to be, is a lot of fun for me. And even with some of the early pick and rolls that they'll flow into, if it doesn't work, the guards aren't dribbling five or six times trying to force something. It's two dribbles. I don't have an advantage. Here's Vooch. I may jot right back up the floor and get into a handoff and we start this chain over again. It may just be an immediate backdoor cut. And because Vooch is a good passer, he's hitting them immediately. And it's like, you just cannot take a break with this group. And it's where the Bulls are humming offensively. The half-court offense has been very good for them. Last year, at least for portions of it, it felt like, okay, they are scoring at a high clip. But a lot of this is because the transition attack has been pretty darn good. The fact that they are getting this kind of juice, Kevin Huerter has been a joy to watch this year. That brother is motivated. Shooting the leather off the ball, but part of the random cuts and the random pitch and catches with him and Vooch. It's been cool stuff. I assume we'll get well soon. He was also part of that. He's also just been a monster in transition to that point. But like, the guards just have really good synergy with Vooch, just to kind of bounce off what you said earlier. So I want to see them keep it up, because if so, like, I'm certainly going to end up being wrong about where I thought the Bulls were going to be this year if they maintain this play. But it's been a fun start for him, Steve.
Fully understood. You mentioned that they can't take a break. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with the post-up talking Dallas Mavericks, y'all.
And we are back, and Steve, it is time to post up. It's time to talk about some teams that make us think, some teams that make us go, either positively or negatively. Kick us off, King.
I have been thinking about the Dallas Mavericks and trying to figure out what is this team? Who are the Dallas Mavericks? What am I watching? Positive and negative. What is their identity? What is their winning formula? How do they get to what they need to get to? Nikias, they are eighth in defensive rating. They are 30th in offensive rating. Which one of those do you feel more when you watch the Dallas Mavericks?
I think by default, I feel the offense because of how clunky it is and because of the struggles that they've had to consistently generate advantages. And I'm glad that you came with the ratings before I could get to them. Because I watched this Mavericks group as I was doing a little weekend catch up.
Yeah.
And there are just so many possessions where it's like, okay, cool. Here's the collective size. Neat. That was a cool switch that they put together. I like the first half of this possession. What is this breakdown? How did this possibly happen?
Let's hang right there. Because this is where my mind is not comprehending and does not understand. I enjoy tall ball. I like size out there on the court. I think it's a neat thing you can do. If you are tall, it's likely to make your defense better. It's a defensive adjustment. We, in theory, have more size and length to disrupt you. We can pressure the ball. We can defend multiple positions. We can keep the ball in front. We should, in theory, be able to protect the paint. They gave up 72 points in the paint against the Detroit Pistons. They then followed that up by giving up 62 points in the paint to the Houston Rockets. Teams are averaging 56.9 points in the paint against the Dallas Mavericks. 29th in the league. They are behind the Brooklyn Nets, Sacramento Kings, and Chicago Bulls. And I know exactly how you feel about all of those teams defensively. When you watch the Dallas Mavericks defensively, what do you see? Do you see ball pressure? Do you see physicality off the ball? Do you see a team just standing in their shell defensive spots? When there's a cut, are they grabbing? Are they putting their arm into someone? Mm-hmm. Are they nailing all the switches? How often when you turn on the Dallas Mavericks, do you see a late rotation from someone? You can't be the size team and be the team has issues at the first level, which is just the pick and roll, the handoff, whatever happens on the court, and behind it, because in theory, you're supposed to be able to be clean up top and have the size to protect. If you're not, you can't go 0 for 2 from the line there. And so we've seen them have decent possessions. That's why I stopped you there, because we've seen 15 seconds of defense. Mm-hmm. We've seen 18 seconds of defense. We've also seen where there's 4 seconds of defense. Where the transition's not there, where they're just giving open up roles and they're not really rotating and nailing that. How can they be tighter there? Because they don't have the margin for error with this group to be this defensively. That has to be baked in. They have to nail that every day. Back to you on defense. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. Because like that's what's been confusing for me. And again, like we say all of this and you turn on Mavericks game and you see this and then you zoom out, it's like they're eighth. And I'm just like, how on earth are you eighth with some of the breakdowns that I am seeing for this team? Now, the obvious answer is you check shooting variance. You see what shots they're giving up. We're also like 2 weeks into the season, so things are going to normalize. Like that is the honest, boring answer to this. But it is just kind of like, to your point, Steve, you want to see the screws tighten. Because there is the potential to have all this length and to shrink the floor. We can just switch a whole bunch of stuff. You can't really poke at matchups because if one of our big guys ends up in a mismatch somehow, there's probably a non-shooter somewhere so we can send help from another big guy. So, like, the seeds are there. And that was kind of the theory heading in. If you were a Mavs optimist about what this regular season could be, it was likely going to be baked off of what the defense could be and giving the offense margin for error to kind of figure things out. And so, like, statistically, that's been the case. But you watch those games, just like, I don't really like this. What's kind of bugged me the most about this Mavericks group and just, like, the tall ball of it all, as you know, I am a fan of putting a bunch of size on the floor. It's weird to have this collective of size. And I know there's been injury stuff with Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford, et cetera. So, like, there are reasons to this. AD, for that matter. It's weird for you to be the tall ball team and you are just mid as a rebounding group.
Oh.
That bugs the life out of me. Think, as of recording, 15th in defensive rebound rate per cleaning the glass. Dead last in offensive rebound rate. And so, like, on one hand, it's like these are a lot of tall people, so you may want to prioritize getting back so you don't get burned by speed in transition. Logically can make that make sense. Dead last with a gap with all this size. Like, you should just be beating teams up. And, like, it's odd to me. It's odd to me.
Yeah, they've got to clean that up. You know, I know the possession battle of it all, but they've got to just have a stronger base defensively for this to work. And then offensively, talk about it real quick. Mm-hmm. I've liked a lot of the ideas from the offense. Visually, I like the idea of them trying to have more flow and movement in the half court. I like having a big flash to the elbow, hit them, and now you cut off. I like pin downs. I like split action. You know, guards, wings, screening for each other, try and get a switch, confused, get a cut. The problem for the Dallas Mavericks is that defenses have not cared about any of it. Mm-hmm. We're either switching these, or we are in a drop and saying, go ahead. And I'm talking about the type of drop. You turn on that Houston game, Alperen Şengün's like, cool, you're dribbling. I'm going to get back to the big. Very quickly. Not even in a, I don't want to guard. I just don't believe in that. Yeah. I like Christie getting downhill and trying to attack. If the defense isn't moved, there's no help. It's just 2v2. And so, how did they kind of find a way to unlock? Like, I feel like this is a good base with something that unlocks it, but they don't have the thing that unlocks it right now. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to see them. I think for me, like, I think they don't have a player that has more than 10 drives a night, according to the tracking data. I think Flags at 9.9, D'Angelo Russell's at 7.4. They've, like, D'Angelo Russell, when he comes in, he pops off the page because they look different offensively.
He can dribble.
It's like, it's not helping how defenses are treating.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. And like, was looking at some of the play type stuff for Dallas earlier this morning, just in preparation for the pod. Like, the tracking for post-ups versus isolations are always funny, especially as you mentioned, you get into some of like the elbow catches. It's always kind of difficult to suss out, like, what is this, an actual post-touch? And you're doing hub stuff, or is this just we're facing up and we're attacking? But as of recording, the Dallas Mavericks 23rd in post-up volume so far this year. They've logged 22 of them per Genius IQ. And for, again, a tall team like this, you obviously don't want to build the entire boat out of post-ups, especially in light of some of the spacing issues that Dallas has. So, like, it makes sense that they're not number one. But them being bottom 10 is also kind of interesting. Because, like, I understand the logic of, let's get some movement. Let's make the defense move. Like, we don't want to be static group. But I do think when your offense is 30th anyway, I wonder if slash when they get to a point where it's just like, this is not going to be pretty. This is how teams are going to treat us. We just have to lean into the advantages that we have. And the advantage that we have is size. We have to just win the offensive glass, bludgeon the paint. And if we get 5 threes from Clay, if we get 3 threes from Max Christie, if we get 3 threes from D'Angelo Russell to compliment things, if Cooper Flagg knocks down one, if PJ Washington knocks down two, we will get that out of the mud. But we just have to bring these games into the mud. Like, I wonder if they get to that point. It doesn't have to be super extreme, and that's, like, literally the only thing that they do. But off the top of my head, at the very least, that feels like the easiest way to kind of simplify things and get from 30th, at the very least. Because, like, that part is attainable. Like, if we're talking about some of the breakdowns defensively in their eighth, it at least gives the vibe of this is probably going to regress a little bit. Maybe they're closer to 13th or 14th. What is the thing that pushes them from 30th to like 22nd? That's not great, but like, what is it? And the broader question is, as you're trying to cycle through what we want to do offensively, et cetera, how can we make life easier for Cooper Flagg? Because that's really what this season, at least for me, what this season is about. Like, if this was going to be like a 42-win Dallas team, that would have been a bonus for me because that would likely mean Cooper Flagg looked good anyway. But you don't want to get into him just struggling all year to find some easy because of what the context is, how defenses are treating them, and what you are also trying to accomplish outright. So, like, that's where I'm just like, okay, what is this going to be?
Well, my brother, I'm glad you said that, because let's talk about the Cooper Flagg of it all, right? Mm-hmm. I am still on the side of patience with Cooper Flagg. Young player, young league. Success in life and in the NBA, it's not always linear. That's just a part of the program. I've been thinking, and I'm glad you brought up the point of, hey, how do we make it easier for Cooper Flagg? I've been thinking, and Kevin Durant had a great quote after their game against the Mavericks, and talking about Cooper Flagg, and he actually brought up himself. And I paraphrase quote, he said, KD came in the college playing the 4 and the 5, and he came in the league playing the 2. So it's a position change that can throw you off earlier in your career, and that flag is still working through it. I do think he's still working through it. Now, you know me, I'm not huge on the point guard of it all. I understand why it gets said. I know lineup distinctions. I just think it steers the conversation in a different direction. Part of the appeal of Cooper Flagg in Dallas, and just overall talent-wise in the NBA, his ability to be put in different spots on the court. He's someone who can operate in pick and roll. He's someone who can get a dribble handoff and get downhill. You can put him in off-ball actions, backdoor cuts. He's good with movement. We've seen Dallas clear aside, let him post up. You mentioned how do we get to the easy of it all. Their last two games against Detroit and Houston. Who's guarding Cooper Flagg? A Thompson. Pick one. So now you're in a different role. You've got different people guarding you. And they're working to take some of that appeal away, that overall appeal away of what you do as far as the totality of it. Okay, you want to be in an off-ball movement? Denial. Fantastic. You want to be in pick-and-roll? Ball pressure. You want to post up? Help shown. But they're poking at all of the things that Cooper Flagg does, and so the context makes it interesting. How do they open things up for him? I think when you're a player as good as Cooper Flagg, and you have this kind of talent potential, he's going to have the ball in his hands. I think that's fair. But even regardless of the point guard at all, I think the biggest opportunity, and this is not new for any young player in the NBA, the area of opportunity is for him to understand what the reads are. Setting up his man to come off screens and pick and roll and reading the defense once he gets a screen. Understanding when a shot is there, when a pass is there. Again, that's nothing new for a new player. Don't predetermine what you're going to do, but that's why these reps are important. So you mentioned the context and, hey, how's he going to figure it out? He has the opportunity to work through this, you know? So he's going to get these reps, and so you have to balance out, okay, do we hit the easy button and get him going a little bit, or do we have the balance of, we need you to get to this level, you're going to have to get these reps in different actions? Because we saw against Houston, he saw Reed Shepard. Jason Kidd saw Reed Shepard. And they both said, would you like to guard Cooper Flagg? And Cooper Flagg looked comfortable. There were times where Cooper Flagg was in a lineup where Houston had double bigs. Shingun or Adams was on him. You saw a little bit more comfort as far as being able to play, as far as, oh, I got to drive. I know I got this. You saw him flow a little bit more as far as, okay, I can play with D'Angelo Russell. I can pick and pop. I got that shot. So he has his rhythm. He has his understanding of what he could do. He's at his best when he's decisive, when he makes quick decisions, when he's playing the game. But it's just, there are those moments, the pick and roll especially. Okay, you got a screen. Going. You're thinking it's a drop, right? Late switch from a big. And now you've picked up your dribble. There's no roll there. Okay, we got to get off of it. Pick and roll. You're thinking it's a drop. You think the big's going to commit late to you. Cool, I can throw this lob. No, the big sat back and got back to the lob. And that's not new. So I would preach, again, patience with Cooper Flagg. But I've been thinking a lot about how do you balance making things easier for him and letting him do things you know he can do versus, hey, we need the growth and the opportunities there.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I will just quickly say, I hope I don't need to say it at this point, but I am also not super worried about Cooper Flagg in the start. Like, we are, again, 2 weeks into the season, and we all agree that the context in Dallas is kind of wonky. And if you don't want to hear from us, just ask your favorite Mavericks fan on insert social media platform here, and you will likely get a similar conceptual answer with a little bit more color, depending on who you ask. So I'm not worried, but I am with you. Like, I do want to see how they find that balance, because one, Cooper can just do a lot of things. Like, I think it's more difficult for him because he can do so many things. It's not as easy, or it's not as simple to like find the easy button with him, because you just have so many options to choose from. And when the context is weird and defense can just kind of take away a little bit of everything because of where they're stationed and who they're ignoring and stuff like that, it's just kind of hard to find a rhythm. So not worried, but I would like to see Dallas have a little bit more direction, especially offensively. Oh boy.
Yeah. I was thinking, go there. Yes. Who you got? Sorry. No, I've been sitting on that for a little bit.
No, I think that's fair. I'll go quickly. We'll stay in division. The San Antonio Spurs, coming off of their first loss of the season against the Phoenix Suns. I'll quickly say, get well soon to Dylan Harper, who's going to be out for a while now. But as of recording, 12th in offense, 2nd in defense, 4th in net rating. They've just been very good. The one thing that I am keeping an eye on, particularly with the offense, is defense is getting weird against them.
Okay.
They saw zone on about 1.5% of their possessions last year. That's up to 5% this year. They saw a double team or just a second defender on about 9% of their total touches last season. That was 20th in the league. That's up to 11% so far this year, Steve. That's 4th. Naturally, a lot of that is just the Victor Wembanyama of it all. But as I'm watching the Suns game, and here's a whole lot of double teams. We talked about that Nets game. Here are a whole lot of double teams. Pelicans game. This is odd. We're going to toss out zone. And the Spurs sputtered. The Miami Heat, we got to make a run. Here's some zone. The Spurs sputtered. And I'm just like, hey, on one hand, it kind of reminds me of the Nate Tibbetts of it all in the W Finals. Like, hey, I'm glad they had to go zone this early. It's good that the Spurs are seeing these kind of looks earlier this year so they can work through them. On the other hand, it's like, hey, there is just the sample of what you've looked like when teams have gone quick early double or gone zone and just we're going to junk this up. They've had a time trying to work through some of these quote unquote exotic looks so far this year. So again, is it like they can never solve this? This is the fatal flaw. I'm not saying that. It's just more, this is perking up quite a bit. And it is, I would imagine, going to reach a point where the scouting report is going to be, oh, this is how we slow them down. And the Spurs need to make sure that that does not become part of the bit. And this to channel my inner Steve.
No, this is the flip side of success in the NBA. All right, you're playing well. How do we take this away? Got to remember, people wear these polos and they sit for hours and think about how to make a good thing not good anymore. And mm-hmm. So that's part of the success. Like, the Spurs are going to have to learn how to win and learn through this. And the worst thing that can happen, not saying this is now, but like, as you mentioned, you do not want a team to poke and find something. And now team that's better than them does it.
Oh, we can do it too.
Yeah. We can execute this. That's always the game plan game is always tough. It's like, ooh, secret's out a little bit. I don't think we're there yet. So I wanted to mention that. It also sounds like they missed De'Aaron Fox.
That's such a good shot. That's a good shot. I'll let you have that one. I'll let you have that one. Who else is making you go, Steve?
Well, let's the New York Knicks last two games. Against Chicago, 43 made field goals, 31 assists, 6 players in double figures. Against the Washington Wizards, 44 made field goals, 32 assists, 7 players in double figures. So we are seeing more of the balance offensively from the Knicks, which I believe is the overall vision for them. So again, preach patience with that. Karl-Anthony Towns, more involved. And so we're kind of getting the blend of, we got pace, we got tempo, we got spacing. Cat, get to the elbow. You turn that into a post-up, buddy. Pick and roll with Jalen Brunson. Have a blast. And so that's kind of where it happens throughout a season. Mark what's happening. Have your concerns. That's fine. But see if it progresses. Don't automatically assume it's going to be this forever. Sometimes it is. And you learn that later. But don't make it an automatic. But I like Cat being involved in more of those dribble handoffs. I like the overall mindset they have. You get the buy-in. Good balance from the Knicks on top of the Jalen Brunson and Cat of it all. So things coming together nicely for them on the offensive end. Defense does have to be at a certain level, I will say that.
No, I think that's fair. And just quickly pulling this up on Genius IQ, last three games for Karl-Anthony Towns in terms of elbow area touches. We got 10 against the Bulls. We got 8 against the Bulls. We got 12 against the Wizards. And I cited those stats. We talked about the Knicks last week, where it was around 7 per game. I like seeing the uptick, Steve. I like seeing the uptick. Get Cat comfortable. Let him make an early impact. And you can still get to Brunson. You can still have OG kicking things off with drives like he did in the second Bulls game. Because good Lord, that brother was aggressive early. You still have Mikal Bridges, etc. This is the way. This is why you be patient. You don't just press the button. This is bad. Cat won't trade Cat. You don't do that. You just say, this is kind of odd. Let's see how they figure it out. Last three games, it certainly feels like they're finding a better balance. And now look at this Knicks offense. So I like that you brought up the New York Knicks on that front. We talked about the Spurs. Let's talk about the Suns, who just beat the Spurs. And I tossed the free throw to you about, hey, do you believe in the Suns getting all these threes up? I will just say broadly, the formula of Devin Booker, primary initiator, he has put some ridiculous passes on film, Steve. Mm-hmm. And more important than the ridiculous skips and stuff that he's put on film, he's just making the easy play more often. He's making it quicker. And I think that is important. And it's especially important within the context of him just being the most trapped player in the league in pick and roll so far this year, at least at the highest rate among high volume ball handlers. So he kind of had to make these reads.
Which is a little ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. Hope he worked on his game. But but it's more important that he's making those reads as quickly as he is. And then he's sprinkling the fun stuff on top of that. And the Suns, like they have multiple wings and forwards and some bigs that can make some short roll decisions, which is a lot of fun for me. I once again will lightly tap the Mark Williams is kind of doing some stuff button in Phoenix. I'm not going to know you yet, Steve, but just know that I'm monitoring and I'm seeing it. But they are getting threes up, and defensively, they'll mix in the full court pressure. They said absolutely not to Victor Wembanyama. That was just a funny game to go back and watch. Did not watch that one live. Watched it the day after. But hey, we're going to get into the off-ball package with Victor Wembanyama. The Phoenix Suns said, absolutely not. No, you're not. Here's this denial. Here's this early physicality. You work to get Wemby a catch. We're pushing that out. And when he catches it, as soon as he turns his back, here's a second Suns defender. And as that second Suns defender is coming, the rotations on time, on target. It just felt like music being played, watching that defense just run on the screen like that. It's just like, hey, man, if they're going to mix in pressure stuff, if they're going to mix in a nice dose of switching, they can have their bigs at different depths depending on who's in. Formula of pesky defense and Devin Booker can do a little bit of everything offensively and three-point volume, that's regular season fun at the very least. And so this is more the Suns are on notice for me. Still 3-4, 19th in offense, 18th in defense. Not calling the world beaters yet, but I do like what they are trying to establish on both ends.
I understand it. So, well, no, I like what Phoenix are doing. They have I think they showed early on in the season we can be annoying defensively. I love the shot on threes and Devin Booker, and so I'm excited about the Suns. Here's the thing. So, I'm sad about the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies. And I don't want to belabor it too much. I will have a Grizzlies rant at some point, I'm certain, based on current events. A lot of people have enjoyed having rants over the few days. And boy, that's a lot to process because it feels like a lot has been said. And I don't know if I want to go that far. I do remember the initial game of the season when these two teams play each other and John Morant tweaked his ankle and finished the game pretty strong. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. This was supposed to be a revenge tour for Zion Williamson and John Morant, and they have disappointed Liv Morgan because this is what is happening right now. Man, I love Jeremiah Fears. I think he's a really good player. He's had zero fears. You never know what he's going to do. He gets a three off a double from Zion, then he calls angle for himself and turns the corner and finishes. And then there's Jordan Poole staring people down. And then then defense is not good.
It's not. And it's just not.
It's just. We don't have a segment for teams that make me go sad, but this does these two. And, you know, yeah, they should put the effects on me right now, like the window with the, like, water running down it.
Please do that in post-production. Oh, my goodness. But, no, I'm right there with you. And while we're here, Steve, I'll just quickly say, on the sad note, I gave everyone the opportunity last week to laugh at Nekias for his bold prediction about the Nets defense. And I thought first 2 months of the year, they're going to be a top 10 defense before starting to lose. And they've just been awful, right? I want to circle back because what do you mean, Jordy Fernandez, in short, in a presser? Like, I'm failing at getting my team to play hard. What do you mean you are failing at getting your team to play hard? Why is that your responsibility? You have professional athletes. There's a baseline level of it's wild, Steve, because like when you think about like tanking in the NBA, NFL, whatever,
the T word,
when you think about that, the general rebuttal is, well, the players don't do that. This is an organizational decision. Like, they're going to put the team together in a way that they're going to lose. The players always want to win. The players aren't trying to lose on purpose so a team can draft their replacement. That's generally what we get, right? Out of interest of the pod, we got to move forward. It hasn't always felt that way, and I don't like that. And I don't like that Jordy has felt the need to press the please play hard button multiple times so far this year. It's shambolic, and it needs to change.
Well, I'll say very quickly, coaches, oftentimes you hear a coach say, I don't want to have to coach effort. that is a part of the program. Got to get the buy-in, got to get the execution, the effort's got to be there. And so I think that's Jordy Moore trying to shield his team and take responsibility for some of what's taking place, as opposed to anything nefarious. So that's just my quick thought. Did you have any other teams that made you think?
That's fair. Just very quickly, the Atlanta Hawks are going to be without Trae Young because of a right MCL sprain for about a month. It's just general, what is this offense going to look like? And buddy, the headache that I got in the first quarter of that Cavs-Hawks game, in which that just some of the most nonsensical turnovers I have ever seen. And it ended up being a very good game, so obviously that just was not the full bit, but it's just like, ooh. The creation without Trae Young, huh? And the funny thing with the on-offs with the Hawks so far, at least as of recording, the offense is 6 points worse with Trae on the bench. Overall, though, the Hawks have a higher net rating with Trae off the floor than on it. That's just early season sample size. Like, you look at the opponent field goal percentages, like, teams shoot like 29% from three in the non-Trae minutes. Like, there are reasons for it, right? But we're about to have an extended stretch without Trae Young, and this is going to put more of a spotlight on Jalen Johnson. What decisions are you making? What level of defensive effort are you going to give consistently? Because I have been kind of disappointed by the Jalen Johnson defense experience so far this year. Kristaps Porzingis, I was going to lean more on him as a scorer. This is about to be a whole lot of Nickeil Alexander-Walker on the ball, and that has been a little skittish for me. So what balance does he find as a driver, as a pull-up shooter, as a playmaker? That's going to be interesting. So just keeping eyes on the Hawks in general and the Utah Jazz. Will Hardy also wasn't very happy as they got to the start. And as Steve said, hey, we're going to see what happens when they go on the road. And just multiple blowouts. And Will Hardy was like, to paraphrase, I feel like that opening win against the Clippers kind of gave us a false sense of who we really are. And I will poke and prod with these lineups to find guys that want to play hard. And I was like, oh. Well, them getting blown out by the Hornets with the Hornets on the second night of a back-to-back was just kind of wild to me as I was watching that game. Con Knipple lit them up in that first quarter, in that game in general. So very fun on that regard. But the hey, Utah, get it together. No. Also, Keyonte George, he might just be good, Steve. He might just be good. He might just be good.
He's cooking. He's knocking on the door, most improved. Now, I will say very quickly, Jazz were able to beat Boston on the road, so I got to take an L there. But I will say Nekias.
What's up, Nekias? What up, Goat?
Two words.
Uh-huh.
Kevin Love, Yusuf Nurkic, must-see TV.
tremendous shot, as was the one by Yusuf Nurkic in the Ainge Bowl to knock off the Boston Celtics. Incredible into that one. But yeah, fun start for Utah. Not so fun after the start. And then you get that win against Boston on the road. So it's just like, hey, we're just going to keep an eye on it. And once again, Keyonte George, just very good at basketball, it would appear. What was it 31-5-4 in the most recent outing? He's just, hey, man.
I guess so nice right. You said it twice.
So, yeah, I had to say it, Steve. Keyonte has just been playing that well. He has been, I guess, aside from Laurie, he's been the brightest spot of the Utah season. Okay, I've talked enough about Utah. We're going to take another break, and when we return, it is time to hit the elbow. We're shouting out some players not named Keyonte George since we did that, and we close with free throws. We'll be right back. And we are back, and Steve, it is time to hit the elbow. Let's shout out some players that we've enjoyed over this last stretch, or if we haven't shouted them out before, just what we've seen from them this season. I'll kick things off, and I'm sure that you're going to get a chuckle out of this, but can we talk about Donovan Mitchell?
Noted the
first time Nekias Duncan has talked about Donovan Mitchell on this podcast. No, in all seriousness, 29.5 points per game as of recording. That would be a career high for him. 66% on twos to start the season, Steve. We getting all of the windmill gathers and push shots and awkward foot finishes and all. It's been a lot of fun for Donovan Mitchell inside the arc when he's able to get there. Because that's more of a broader Cleveland point, because teams have generally just said, yeah, we don't care about that guy out there. Or we just don't want y'all to get these driving kicks going. We saw what happened last year when y'all were flirting with the best offensive rating in NBA history. No. So while Donovan Mitchell is converting 66% of his twos, and it's absurd, he's averaging about 9 shots per game inside the arc, which would currently be a career low for him. And to that point, per Genius IQ, he has seen a help defender present on 82% of his drives this year. That mark was at 75% last year, Steve. Just to really hammer home the point that teams are flooding the paint against Donovan Mitchell and the Cleveland Cavaliers at large, but specifically Donovan Mitchell. But he, the mix of the drives and interior finishes and the pull-up threes as he's shooting the leather off the ball, and a lot of these are coming off the bounce. He is carrying this Cleveland offense right now while they wait for Darius Garland to come back, while they wait for Evan Mobley to hit like some level of consistency on the offensive end. He's done some pretty heavy work for the Cavs, and I want to salute him. He's doing his thing.
So I'm glad you mentioned Donovan Mitchell because fun fact, he has now played 200 career games with the Cleveland Cavaliers. In those games, the Cavs are 139-61.
That seems good. Is that,
that is the highest winning percentage by a single player in franchise history.
Yeah, take that, LeBron. No, but no, that's what incredible.
You said that. That was that's me. So I just wanted to mix that in there. Glad you're respecting the Donovan Mitchell year.
Okay.
So I'm going to peel the curtain back real quick, folks. I had Jaylen Brown because I was really impressed with his three-point shooting, and he was cooking from three. The catch-and-shoot threes were up. Pull-up threes were up. He's shooting about 53% on catch-and-shoot threes, 45.8% on pull-up threes, just getting after it. No hesitation. Really admired that start from him. Thought it was important for Boston. Think he embodied the mindset they need to have offensively, get after it. And then they played the Utah Jazz. And, Nikias, do you want to know how many threes Jaylen Brown made in that game?
One, I think.
Not a one.
Oh, not a one.
Not a single one. And so all those averages and stats that I had, numbers went all the way down. I still salute Jaylen Brown for, again, being more comfortable taking that shot. And I think it's a scenario where those shots open up the drive. But I can't do what I plan to do. And I wanted to make fun of myself on the podcast. So there's that.
Hey, listen, transparency is important, as is Jaylen Brown to the Boston Celtics. So I think it's important to highlight some of the process improvements from Jaylen Brown, as he is the number one option for this Boston Celtics group. Actually, I have a Celtics-related free throw a little bit later. Just want to give the quick tease there. It's kind of made me sad, but I didn't want to fully put it in the sad section. But just wanted to give you the teaser there. Steve, I would like to talk about Bam Adebayo. And I talked about him a little bit when we did the Heat segment last week, as the offense has been very good overall this year still. But my question that I had was, okay, how is Bam fitting into this? Because it feels like it is, you are space, you are space, you are space, you are space. Oh, snap, you need the ball. Here's four straight elbow touches. I'm like, well, let's find a blend if we can get there. But you zoom out, Bam's averaging 22-9-3. The finishing is perking up. The mid-range jumper is starting to fall a little bit more than it was earlier in the season. So his efficiency is on the way back to normal level. So that's positive. He is shooting well from three, and he's doing so on high volume, which is a plus. We'll see where that normalizes at. But part of the five-out system, you need those threes. Bam was experimenting with threes last year. He's continued that. That's cool. Defensively, for Bam Adebayo, as of recording, no player in the NBA has switched more pick and rolls to Bam Adebayo. On those possessions, teams are scoring roughly 64 points per 100 possessions. It is absurd. It is not new, but it is absurd nonetheless that you're generally not going to have fun when you try to poke at Bam Adebayo in space. And so I just wanted to salute, especially in light of the free throw that I tossed at you about who's been the second best defender, if we're assuming Wemby is one. At the very least, Bam has an argument. I don't know if I get firmly there. It's like because he's switching as much as he has, this is always the balance with Miami. He switches a ton. So then offenses are like, all right, cool. Let's put Bam in action. And then you stand way over here and then we're going to attack elsewhere. And we're going to hunt these other guys. And so there's part of that. Bam is contesting about two shots per game at the rim so far this year, incredibly low. And because it's low, I think it's like 66% conversion rate right now, which is just well below a usual Bam level. So like that is a thing that you could poke at. He's going to have to be better. Scheme-wise, there are ways to have him closer to the rim so he can affect more shots at the rim. But he's still nuts. He's still one of the best defenders in basketball. And I wanted to make sure I highlighted that, especially since I talked a little bit about like some of the offensive weirdness to the start of the year for him.
Understood. I definitely want to give a salute and a shout out to Cade Cunningham, fourth in the NBA in drives per game. The Pistons are winning some games. And let me tell you, Cade Cunningham has gotten better. And so I think the one thing that stood out to me outside of, you know, straight line drives, he can get to a spot and pull up. The passing is starting to pop in a different way. And he's feeling more comfortable. making these plays and reads as teams throw more attention at him, as teams put two on the ball more, as they double him randomly, as we've seen before, being able to make those reads and those plays, the combination of his talent and him being able to nail those can open up a lot for Detroit. And I think he's put together a really strong season to start. I think the sky's the limit for Cade Cunningham.
Okay, I like the Cade shot. Another guy that's getting two on the ball quite a bit, but he's handling it well. And as the shot making has perked up over the last few games, defenses have not had fun dealing with him. Or Jalen Duren, for that matter. But, you know, we can say that for, like, a broader Pistons discussion at a later date. But I like the Cade shot, Steve. I want to talk a little bit about Zach LaVine. Not too much, but a little bit about Zach LaVine. Who's... But no, just want to sprinkle in. The Kings have been weird, but Zach LaVine has just been the play finisher of all play finishers. As of recording, 29.5 points per game, which would be a career high for him. 65% on twos. The downhill juice from him has been incredible. Nearly 1.3 points per possession on any trip featuring a Zach LaVine drive. That is fifth among 88 players to log at least 40 drives so far this year. Getting to the line more. This is the first time since the 2022-23 season that he's averaging at least 5 free throw attempts per game. But in addition to that, still bombing away from three. Incredibly high volume, shooting 40% from three. He's just been fun offensively. And I kind of respect that within this weird context, Zach LaVine's just kind of been like, all right, cool. Y'all got Dennis Schroeder and you got Russ and, you know, we got DeMar DeRozan that can still play make. DeMontis Sabonis. I'm going to get buckets. 1.7 assists per game for Zach LaVine right now. I'm just going to do all the efficient scoring. Y'all handle everything else. Somebody's got to put the ball in the gosh darn hoop. The Kings-Bucks game was a pleasant surprise, both in terms of the win, but just also just how fun and up and down that game was. Late comeback for the Bucks, didn't quite get there. I still don't know what the Giannis shot was, which makes it more fitting that he didn't came back against the Indiana Pacers. Like, yeah, let's just go Jordan Fade, game winner. We got it. Shout out Giannis. But I see you, Zach LaVine. Though I will sprinkle in, if you'd like to laugh, we're playing with some early sample sizes here. Sacramento Kings, a minus 11 net rating with Zach LaVine on the floor and a plus 15.8 with him off. That's just kind of, it's just kind of tough in light of all the scoring that he's doing. But I see you. You are a bucket, Zach LaVine. I would like to see you on a good team at some point.
I respect it. Now, I mentioned that I was a little bit sad about the New Orleans Pelicans. I'll make up for it here. Let's give a salute to Herb Jones, because I think the shot is realer than people think. Herb Jones, 46.2 from three on 4.3 attempts. Both are career highs. 50% catch and shoot threes, according to the tracking data. So if you have a option where Herb Jones is really a 3-and-D player, I think that's a positive sign for the New Orleans Pelicans. So I made up for it.
There we go. Would also like to see him on a good team. Steve, while we're on the Bucks, loosely connected to the Bucks, as I gave Giannis a shout out. Ryan Rollins, 17-5-6. Two steals per game towards the top of the league in that. He is second among high-volume pick-and-roll ball handlers in efficiency right now. I have been super impressed. When we did the season preview about the Bucks, I made sure to include Ryan Rollins in what I thought was going to be Milwaukee's best lineup and the lineup that I want to see most of. I just trust the defense for him. I just trust the drives. And if the shooting is real, and it appears to be, that is just a really complete guard. I like the chemistry that he's been able to build with Giannis on and off the ball. He's just a good player. He's just a really good player. I wish I had something fancier to say about Ryan Rollins, since we already talked about him a little bit with the Bucks, but he's just been good. I just want to salute him. I've really enjoyed his season. He's been a part of this elite Milwaukee half-court offense so far. Deserves his flowers.
Speaking of good, I want to give a salute to Jabari Smith Jr., for just doing his job for the Houston Rockets. You need me to play defense? I got it. You need to be active and switch? I got it. Is there a double team? You swing me the ball? I'll drive. I can get to a bucket. More comfort. I can get to the post. I can have a stronger mindset. So him having kind of a career year within what Houston's doing, who, again, I believe, stunningly, one of the best offenses in the NBA. By the way, Rockets fans, I remember all them Fred VanVleet tweets when that went down. Hey, hey, look at me. Look at me in my eyes. But Jabari Smith's had a hell of a year.
I like the Jabari Smith shout, especially we talked about Houston a little bit. I'm just like, hey, I'm waiting on Jabari and Tari to kind of settle in. Jabari has certainly done that. Tari was still keeping eyes on Tari Eason minutes right now. But quick shout out to Jabari. And one thing I'll say quickly, Steve, not just the best offense in the league, the Houston Rockets. I think they currently have the best offensive rating in NBA history right now, Steve.
Wow.
We're bringing it back. We're bringing it back. The Houston Rockets getting all of the buckets for the long time dunkers.
If you're new, Nekai is literally, depending on the team, I think it's more the Kings, Pacers, whoever it is, will drop this
the stat. The Celtics, the Cavs.
Ad nauseum. So salute to Nekai for giving that to Houston. Oh my. Oh my goodness.
They're doing the thing. Last player shout out for me, Steve. Musa Diabate of the Charlotte Hornets. Currently averaging a career high in points, 11 a game, 7 boards. He's once again crushing it on the offensive glass, averaging a block off the bench. One of my favorite bits from this young NBA season is watching the Hornets, and they have Ryan Kalkbrenner, who's blocking everything, by the way, or at least trying to contest everything. But they have Ryan Kalkbrenner in. He's just in the deepest drop coverage you've ever seen. We are keeping you near the rim. We want you here because we don't really want you out in the perimeter. And then Musa Diabate checks in, and Charlotte's like, yeah, we're switching everything. We might have you up at the level. Here's all this activity. So, like, the defense has been fun. His rim protection numbers are a little bit better. I think about 2 percentage points lower in terms of what he's allowing when contesting shots at the rim than it was last year. Big thing for me with Musa, Steve, because we know defensive energy is going to bring it. He's going to kill you on the offensive glass. The non-dunk finishing from Musa Diabate. The fact that he'll lurk around the dunker spot to kind of flash to the middle of the floor. He's putting the ball on the floor twice, and he's getting to some of these touch finishes. Makes him a more complete big. Steve, last year, shot 47% on non-dunk finishes around the rim. He's at around 55% this year. If that leap is real, like he's just a starter in the league. So I hope that he's able to maintain that. But I just want to salute what Moose is doing in Charlotte. I'm not going to turn it into a whole Hornet segment out of the interest of time, but I did want to shout him out.
Moose. Speaking of playing well, Brandon Ingram, what kind of bucket would you like? I could provide it. Don't even worry about it. A restricted area shooting 77%. Mid-range, 17 to 29, 58.6%. Between the area of 15 to 19 feet, he's shooting 70.6% from the field.
It's nuts.
It's pretty insane. Like, he's mixing in more threes, but anything you need from him, basketball, like a bucket wise, you want to talk about a bucket getter, he's getting buckets. So, I want to give a quick salute to Brandon Ingram. Do you have free throws?
I do indeed have a few free throws for you, Steve.
Okay. What we got?
The Giannis game winner or the Austin Reeves game winner?
Giannis game one.
Okay. All right. Quickly, as we'll let this sit as a quick tease, who is a rookie you're excited to talk about that not many people are talking about yet?
Oh, that's a really good question. I have to think about that for a quick second.
Okay.
Con Knipp.
Okay. Shout out to Charlotte Hornets. We will revive a bit. Who's happier right now? Ja Morant, Herb Jones, or Miles Garrett?
Herb Jones.
Okay. In the sad division, do we need to talk about Derek White's season yet, or is it too early?
I have a free throw related to you, but boy, let me tell you, let's have a chat about that old E word, huh, folks? that old efficiency word. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it someday.
Okay. Steve, Devin Vassell or Dante DiVincenzo so far this year?
Yeah, I'm sticking with Devin Vassell, but Dante's been good.
Okay. Last one for me. Are you worried at all about the Sixers backcourt's workload? Tyrese Maxey averaging 42.5 minutes per game as of recording. VJ Edgecombe at 39 right now. Tyrese Maxey leading the NBA in touches per game at nearly 107. VJ Edgecombe at 85.3. And both are playing very hard defensively, which should be saluted. But feels like a lot. While they're trying to settle in and they are playing well, do you have any concerns, or is it just this is just youthful exuberance? They're going to be fine.
Youthful exuberance. And hey, man, we're winning games that I'm not sure we're up here right now. Yeah, y'all keep hooping. Yeah. You guys got to keep playing. I wanted to get him out the game, but no, you got to stay in. Yeah. I mean, hopefully as Joel Embiid gets healthier, Paul George comes back, it should tamper down a little bit. But yeah, right now we got to go get it.
Okay, just figure out check it. I'm kind of getting the point where it's like I would like to see Paul George just so they can operate off ball a little bit more than they have been. Yeah. You got any free throws?
Yeah. Do you think the Warriors thought they would end up losing two road games because of Ryan Rollins and Aaron Nesmith and Quentin Jackson?
Probably not. Which, hey, man. secondary free throw. Had a lot of praise for Jonathan Kuminga.
Oh, here it is.
This year. And I kept saying, I just want to see consistency. That's all I need. I don't like some of the things that have perked up during this little mini mess stretch for the Warriors. So it should still just be fine, but I'm just saying, I noted the first thing. I want to note the second thing, too. That's all I got.
Very good. Russell Westbrook had 26, 12 rebounds, and 6 assists in his return to Denver. Is there a soul, a single soul, that wanted to win that game more than him?
Not even a little bit.
Okay. Very good. Move to the All-Star division. Is Pascal Siakam an All-Star?
I want to say yes.
Who was a stronger All-Star case? Zach LaVine, Devin Booker, or Jamal Murray?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that.
Let's go.
I'm going to go Devin Booker.
Okay, you didn't feel good about that. Didn't like that.
That's just a really good question.
Thank you. Julius Randle, 19 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists against Brooklyn. Is Julius Randle an All-Star?
Probably should be with the way that he's playing.
All right. What hurts Celtics fans more, their record or Jusuf Nurkić game winner?
Oh, it's got to be Nurk.
Okay. Well, what was funnier for you, Nick Smith Jr. losing his mind or Rui Hachimura and DeAndre Ayton cooking in the mid-range?
Funnier is going to be the latter. Had me beaming with pride, a former Hornet, Nick Smith Jr., just blasted the Portland Trailblazers with drive after drive after pull-up three after pull-up three. Hey, listen, shout out Nick Smith Jr. Good for him.
All right. A stronger MVP case right now, Cade Cunningham or Donovan Mitchell? Got him. Got him, folks.
Yeah, that's...
Got him.
Darn. Cade and seven?
Okay, very good. A stronger MVP case right now, Victor Wembanyama or Kevin Durant?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, KD is helping spearhead the best offense in NBA history right now. You can't sleep on that. We're going to go Victor Wembanyama.
I like how you did that and then also immediately slept on it. That's quality work.
I did not.
Are you ready for a world where Anthony Simons is more efficient than Derek White?
Sure. Follow-up question is, how long would Anthony Simons be a Celtic if that holds up?
Uncertain. what is more likely, Luka MVP or JJ Redick Coach of the Year?
Probably Luka.
Okay. What comes first from Nekias Duncan, an apology to Doc Rivers or Doc Rivers Coach of the Year?
Oh, the apology.
Wow. Okay. There we go. That's deep. So who wanted that game winner to go in more, Giannis Antetokounmpo or Miles Turner?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, man. Listen, shout out NBA Paint. It does like the whatever app they're using where you have the basketball, you click, you just move the ball. And so if Miles Turner could do that, I think he would have done that. It might just be Miles Turner and Giannis took the darn shot.
Well, also giving immediate thumbs down afterwards. Wild celebration. Pacers, Bucks lore is insane. Wilder, Miles Turner getting viciously booed during the tribute video in the game, or Miles Turner acting like he closed the book at the end of said booing?
it's got to be Miles, I think. Okay. It's talked about it before, but all of this just feels weird.
Look, I'm out of it. That's not my business. Y'all got to figure that out.
It's none of my business.
No, not my business. Last one for me. Who is having a better time right now? Ja Morant, Pelicans fans, or Clippers fans?
Who's having more fun right now?
Yep. Who's having a better time?
This might be Clipper fans by default.
Okay.
But they don't seem pleased with the
process of elimination. Ja Morant or Pelicans fans? Yeah.
It's probably Ja. When he leave, he can kind of do whatever. The Pelicans can't even, they ain't even got the Saints right now. It's just kind of Bye. Yep. Time right, to hit the horns. Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We are live every Tuesday and Friday, so check out our episodes, please. You can catch me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.